What's up, everybody? Welcome to evolutionary.org Raw Podcast Hardcore Edition. This is our 11th episode. This is your host, Steve Sweet. I'm joined by the Mason himself, as always, and we have some awesome topics. Let's get into it right away. First off, I just want to say we have a lot of guys, you know, in Texas and Louisiana who are absolutely getting drenched right now in rain. And we had a hurricane, a very, very major hurricane, Category 4, which basically stalled out over Texas and has dropped at least 25 to 40 to 60 inches of rain in some parts. Really from southwest of Houston all the way into parts of Louisiana, they've gotten over 25 inches of rain minimum. And when the Weather Channel can't even come up with a color that goes above 25 inches of rain, you know that that's pretty fucking bad. So it's a tremendous amount of rain in such a short amount of time, and we've had so much flooding. There's been so much, there's been loss of life. There's been a lot of our listeners who have been affected. They've been basically sent out of their homes, had their possessions destroyed. It's a really horrible situation. So we just want to say, we hope you guys are doing okay out there, and we hope you can get your lives back in order as soon as possible. So let's get to our first topic. Rich Piana died, and we have some updated news today. His girlfriend actually posted a video, and I'm going to let Matt chime in on this because I know he just watched the video. But for me, after watching that video, my observations were, number one, this girl really, really loved him. She really, really cared about him. I think it's really sweet that, you know, you have that type of relationship with someone. And number two, the fact that she stuck with him in the hospital for over 2 weeks and would not leave his side and was hoping he would wake up. That's so sweet. If you can find a girl like that, keep her, you know. And that's the person you want in your life. So that's just amazing to me. So, Matt, you just watched the video. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about what she said and give us your thoughts?
Yeah, so she was trying to basically clear up some of the rumors. There's a lot of stuff that's been out there, you know, by different people and, you know, TMZ and all these other, you know, pretend news places. So she basically said what happened is that he came home, he had his meal that she made for him, and he asked her if she could give him a haircut. And that's the first thing that a lot of people questioned is, well, you know, this guy with all this money, why is his girlfriend cutting his hair? And she said basically she's always cut his hair. She did the mohawk haircut, and he just did things differently. That was kind of his style, right? So they were in the bathroom. She was cutting his hair. She's obviously, at this point, she's behind him. So as she's doing it, I guess he leaned forward to the mirror and kind of leaned on it, and she thought he was just stretching out, you know, so she could do a better job at, you know, getting like the back of his neck. Well, then he started to fall back towards her. So that's when she knew something was wrong. When she saw his face, his eyes were kind of rolling back in his head, and then he went down, and that's when he hit his head on the ground. So that's the basis of the actual incident. She thought he was having an issue to do with sleep apnea because he'll start to breathe funny, and he was doing that kind of thing at the same time when he's on the ground. So she put him on his side and tried to get him to respond. He wasn't. So at that point, that's when she went and called 911. It took them about 10 minutes to get there. She was doing compressions. When they got there, he was not responsive. They had to use the defibrillator just to get him back, and, you know, that kind of is that end of it. The rest of it happened at the hospital. She did mention the reports of the white powder, and apparently he likes to snort his pre-workout. That I don't know. I don't know whether that's true or not. If anybody's going to do it, I guess he's the guy that's going to do it. But she did want to, you know, make that part clear. So I guess that's the basis of it. It is, you know, I guess nice for, you know, all his followers and everybody to hear that directly from her, to get some kind of idea what the family actually is saying happened. And, you know, hopefully we can, you know, kind of start to appreciate who he was and, you know, the good stuff that he did and start to move on, you know, now that we have this story from her. So that's the basis.
What'd you think about her reaction, staying for 2 weeks in the hospital room with him? And I guess she said that she was trying to talk to him, to try to see if he would, you know, she felt like he was able to listen to her. I've never been in that situation before in my life. So to me, I can't imagine, like, being in a situation. I never, had a grandparent or something, like, who was about to pass away and been in the room, you know? So it's hard for me to really understand that part. But if it was my, you know, spouse, my girlfriend, I would definitely be by her side, you know, the whole way. But at the same time, I would be frustrated at, you know, the doctors and the nurses, like, for them to tell me, you know, the truth, like, you know, is this person going to make it or not? And they're probably going to be like, well, we don't know. You know, or they'll probably be like, oh, he's got a 50-50 chance or something like that. So I can't imagine being in such a powerless position, having your spouse just basically unconscious next to you, and it would really be tough on me.
Yeah, it really sounds like it dragged on, too. I mean, they obviously want to try everything they can and see what happens, and it does sound like at the beginning there were small improvements. So that's even tougher, right? Because I'm sure she got her hopes up and, you know, thought, you know, yeah, he's going to pull through, you know, things are getting better, and then, you know, it kind of goes the other way. So it's incredible to deal with something like that. But, you know, they always say that when people are just hanging on and they're about to go, that they, you know, they have an idea of what's going on. And you hear these stories all the time of, you know, people will choose the exact moment when they die in situations like that. Just a quick little story. My mom's mom, so my grandma died last year, and my mom was there every day after work. She'd go see her, and she'd stay with her for the night and everything else. And the day that my grandma passed away was the 2 minutes that my mom left the room to go down and get a coffee. So that's kind of one of those things, right, where she said, you know, she didn't want to die when I was in the room. And you hear these stories all the time. And that's something that, you know, came up in this video too, that they said that, you know, maybe he didn't want to pass away, you know, after you're holding his hand and then you feel something funny or you hear a noise or things like that. So I can't imagine how tough it was for her to be there, especially, I mean, they haven't been together that long. So, you know, they're planning the rest of their life still. You know, they're young relative to their relationship, and it's too bad that, you know, they had to deal with that, and it's something she'll have to deal with forever now.
Yeah, that's a pretty freaky story, Matt. You know, it kind of gets into what happens when we die. And some people believe that you kind of like levitate above your body. You can kind of see yourself, you know, in that process of dying. And then there's been people who have like near-death experiences who have actually seen themselves, basically either in a car accident, they watch themselves being rescued, or they watch themselves being rushed, you know, to the hospital and having the doctors do the, you know, all the stuff to them. So it's a really freaky topic, but we know that when people die, there is like some type of neurosensor in the brain that goes off, and it's the same one that goes off when you dream at night, when you have a really, really strong dream. So that makes you wonder, when you die, do you go into just a dream state where you're just dreaming stuff? So that may tie into the whole, you know, heaven and hell thing. You know, you just dream about being in hell, you dream about being in heaven, or you dream about, you know, being on an island sipping fucking, you know, a margarita, you know, whatever. So it makes you wonder, you know, what happens when we die, and it's something, you know, I guess we'll find out one day when we die, but it's something that a lot of people use, you know, spirituality or their religion or something to kind of make them feel better. But it's a tough situation. It, you know, like if you break up with someone, at least they're alive. You know, even though you're, if Rich Piana would have broke up with her, at least he would have been alive. You know, and the fact that he's dead, you know, that has to be like way worse. I've never had a, you know, but I've never had a situation like that where I've had a spouse or girlfriend or whatever die. So, but, you know, maybe one of my exes is dead. I mean, who knows? I don't keep in contact with them, but it's a weird situation for sure.
Yeah, it's one of those real life topics that you could, you know, you'd obviously talk for hours, days about something like that. But yeah, at this point, we just, you know, hope the family can pull together and everybody makes it out okay, because, you know, no matter if you were a fan of them or not, you don't wish these things on anybody. So hopefully they grieve however they're going to, and, you know, they get through whenever that time is right.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a really, you know, it's a topic that's been, everyone's talking about it. So, you know, we'll definitely, if there's any updates on our next podcast, we'll definitely update everybody if we learn anything new. So, but, you know, he's a very, very popular guy in the fitness industry. So this is a topic that we'll be talking about, you know, for a while as updates come in. So, you know, let's get to some fitness topics now. We have a very interesting one, and Matt's actually doing something very unconventional, and he started it on Monday. And we're on Wednesday now, so Monday would have been day one, Tuesday day two, today is day three. So Matt, you know, you talked about it on the forums, you started a thread with some pictures, and I'm curious to know, you know, can you give us a little bit of a background as to what you're doing without, you know, explaining everything, maybe save that for the next show, but kind of give us a background on what you're doing, why you're doing it, and then kind of go through your first 3 days so far.
Sure. So I guess I have a similar build to what Steve does, if you guys have seen any of our, either of our pictures. Shorter guy. I'm only 5'7". I have a real easy time gaining muscle and fat, and it's a lot harder for me to shred. So while I've always been in good shape, good conditioning compared to, you know, most people, I've never been what I would say shredded and or like super healthy, right? This lifestyle sometimes, even though we look good, isn't the healthiest thing. And I'm getting older now, I'm 34, and I want to switch my focus a little bit on longevity and, you know, feeling good and being lean and kind of going that way. So I wanted to do something a little different. And I thought, you know what, this might be a good time to try out some fasting, something I've never done with my diet before. So I'm just going to start doing that. I'm 3 days in. Basically on Mondays, I'm going to do a 24-hour fast. And then the other 6 days of the week, I'm going to eat about two meals about 12 hours apart. So that's kind of the way I'm going to do it. I'm going to be in a pretty significant deficit. It's going to be around 700 calories per day on the days that I eat. And I'm just going to train 4 days a week and just see what happens. This is kind of a test. I mean, you guys know me whenever we talk about steroid cycles and different things like that. I always tell you guys, if you're comfortable and if you're experienced, experiment. Try stuff out for yourself, because, I mean, if you're just doing stuff because some guy on a forum said to do it, he might be on the other side of that keyboard, you know, a fat ass eating potato chips all day. Like, you don't know. So we all react differently. I definitely got some inspiration from Steve's log that he's been doing, And when you guys see some of the pitchers, when they get put out there, it's a big difference. Like, he was in good shape, but I promise you, he didn't lose all his muscle. And I know that's the biggest fear when we go into, you know, fasting or restricting calories. We're all worried about losing our muscle. So this is more about, you know, dispelling the myth of, I need to eat every 2 hours to, you know, make gains and look good. And this is more about, you know, I'm going to get healthy and, you know, see what happens, see where this goes. So three days in, it's going well so far.
Okay. Yeah, just, you know, for me to update my situation, I did a 10-day fast. For those of you that don't know, there'll be a big blog article that's going to come out at some point. You guys will be able to see my daily progress. But I'm actually stronger now. I'm like a week and a half after my fast. I'm actually stronger now than I was before my fast. So my strength actually went down during the fast a little bit, but now it's stronger. And that has a lot to do with your ghrelin, your hunger hormone that goes up. So I'm actually way hungrier and more stronger now than I was before. So Matt, let's talk a little bit about, you know, your day one, Monday. So Monday, you fasted, basically you did a 24-hour fast. Tell us what you did Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday specifically.
Yep, so Monday the plan was 24-hour fast, so that's exactly what I did. So this was my first time doing this, and it was definitely tough. I would say that the toughest time range, if I could give a range, would be about 11 a.m. to about 3 p.m. was really hard, because you're always thinking about how hungry you are. You're just used to eating, so mentally it's just part of something you do all day, and that was the toughest time for me. Earlier in the morning wasn't too bad. I did have some coffee, so all I had all day was coffee and water. And after about 3 p.m., it kind of goes away for the most part, and I'm thinking, you know, 3 hours from now I'll have my dinner. You know, it's not really a big deal. You kind of just push through. So day one was definitely tough. I woke up on Tuesday for day two, and I actually felt really good. My stomach looked flatter. I just felt like I had a really good sleep. And as I was getting myself ready in the morning, I said, you know what? Why not kickstart this thing? I'm going to do it again. I'm just going to wait until dinner. I don't need to have this, you know, first meal of the day. So I did the same thing that I did Monday. I went all day. And I'll tell you, the 11 to 3 time was still the toughest time, but it was probably 50% easier. It wasn't nearly as bad. The hunger was easier to control. I was able to stay busy. I was able to drink enough water, or a lot more water, I guess. I felt a lot better. And I was kind of like, I was really motivated, right? Because now I'm a couple days in. I'm starting to, you know, here we go. I'm at the beginning of this journey. So then I had my dinner Tuesday night, and I woke up Wednesday morning, which is today, and I felt so good this morning. I looked in the mirror. My face even looked leaner, and I wasn't holding a lot of body fat, but I definitely had some water, because I could really notice it, just the overall shape of my face. My stomach was really flat in the morning. I felt so good, and I said, you know what? I'm on a roll now. I'm just going to do it again. So again, today I didn't have my morning meal, and I went all the way till dinner. The middle of the day was almost not a challenge at all, to be honest. I felt a little bit hungry, but it's amazing how your hunger almost changes. It's a lot less of a physical thing and more of you just don't care about it. It doesn't bother you. So it's like you just almost don't deal with it.
So wait, let's go back to Tuesday night. What did you have for dinner Tuesday specifically? How many calories and what did you eat?
So I ended up just shy of the 800 that I wanted to have for my dinner. So I think I had I made an omelet with 4 eggs. I cut up 1 piece of chicken, mixed it in there, and then I just added in like a ton of vegetables. So I cut up like some peppers, some hot peppers, some onions, some mushrooms, all types of things, and then I used sriracha as a sauce, which does have calories. So my actual food was around 760 or so, So then I figured I'll leave a little bit extra for the cooking spray and the sauce. I had that planned beforehand, right? Okay. So that would have been half of my calories for the day.
And then you had coffee each of the mornings?
Yeah, just 2 cups in the morning.
Plain coffee?
Yes, just black.
No sugar.
Always, okay. No, never.
And
I've
then,
always drank black coffee.
And then tonight, did you have the same meal, around 800 calories?
Yep, pretty much the exact same thing today because I knew it was easy and I knew I had the time to do it and everything. So.
Okay, so you've had basically two around 800 calorie meals in the past 3 days, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And how do you feel right now? Do you feel
great.
Like you're dying?
No, not at all.
Okay.
It's funny, like, before we even get into the training, because I have trained twice, I feel right now no different than I do any other day. Like, I feel good. I have energy. I'll be ready to go to bed when I normally go to bed. Like, yeah, not tired, not drained, not weak,
okay.
Nothing like
and
that.
And then your workouts Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday were...
They were solid.
Workouts?
Yeah, so the first workout that I did was actually Tuesday. I skipped Monday, and that was the best one. Like, I felt so good. The energy was just crazy. And the thing that I was really surprised about was the pumps were really, really solid. I was expecting to not have a huge pump just because, you know, I didn't have the carbs in my system and, you know, just the whole thought process you always have. I didn't take any, like, I don't take any pre-workout drink or anything like that. So it was one of the better workouts I had. Like, I think some of it, too, is because mentally I was in such a positive place because I was just feeling good and I'm, like, excited about what I'm doing. So I'm really motivated. So I was just, you know, so positive. I felt great. Strength was fine. I didn't really notice any difference, but it's only it's only been 2 workouts now, so I'm sure that will go down, but I'm prepared for that. That's just, you know, going to be a part of it. I'm not concerned that my strength will go down a little bit. I'll just use lighter weights. So.
Okay, so we got our podcast, you know, we'll update this next week, but from now till then, is your plan pretty much 1 or 2 large meals a day?
Yeah, so the thing is, my plan will be to have 2 every day. But if I wake up and I have no desire and I feel good and I don't feel like it's a detriment, then I'll just skip it. I'll always have my dinner. But at some point, I'm probably going to have to have the 2. I don't want my metabolism to get too shot, you know, where I'm going to end up having a rebound or some negative effect. But, yeah, I'll just leave it as 1 to 2.
Yeah, the real challenge to this for a lot of people is they have a full fridge, they have a full pantry, they have snacks, and that's the real challenge if you do this 2-meal-a-day thing, because in between you're going to be so tempted to snack on stuff, you know. I love snacking. I love sitting and watching TV snacking on nuts or popcorn or fruit or something, so that's the hardest thing. But what I've done is just not keep snacks in my house. This way, I won't do that. So, you know, that's the way. If you guys want to do this, you really have to, you know, not have this shit in your house, or you have to have some really strong willpower because it's so tempting. I was just thinking today, I was like, man, I love these dried fruit nut combination, but gosh, a quarter cup of that shit is like 200 calories, and it's just like, I can't do it, you know. You eat a half a cup of that, and that's 400 calories. So it's just like, you know, that's the hardest part about doing this type of fasting, this type of whatever you want to call it, intermittent fasting, or this the micro-sheet 1-meal-a-day fasting. So it takes a lot of willpower, and Matt obviously has a lot of willpower. He's a very, very tough guy. So, and we'll get into some of we'll get into this on the next show as well and see his progress. Matt, definitely keep track of your weight. I'm curious to see how your weight drops versus what you look like in the mirror, because in my situation, my weight just kept dropping, my stomach kept leaning up, my face kept leaning up, but I looked, you know, bigger, you know, my muscles looked fuller and I was more vascular. So it was it really kind of makes your body stand out more, and you know, so it's going to be a really cool experiment. So we're looking forward to it. So anything else you want to add before we go on to the next one?
Yeah, if you guys check out the log that I have on evolutionary.org, I'm going to update my weight every Monday. I don't like to weigh myself a lot because I've never had anything positive come from that, but I do want to keep track of it. So every Monday when I update, that's where I'll put that, and I'll put some details on some things throughout the week.
And you were, what, 190-something?
Yeah, like right around 190 that morning.
Okay, yeah, you'll definitely be a few pounds lighter. That'd be my prediction, but we'll see. Yeah, weight fluctuates a lot. Our next topic is an interesting one. It's, do I need testosterone as a base? And we hear a lot about this on the forums. We'll have a guy post a cycle, and he won't include testosterone. And you have a couple people chime in. They'd be like, oh, you need tests in that. You need tests as a base, blah, blah, blah. So this is something, you know, there's not necessarily a right or wrong answer to this, because, you know, there's a lot of things you can use as a base in a steroid cycle or a SARM stack. My personal opinion is SARM stack, I love to use cartarine as a base. I also tell guys you should always stack cartarine as part of your SARM base, because cartarine aids in fat loss and aids in endurance. Those are two things we want. I never heard someone say, I want to gain fat and I want to lessen my endurance. So to me, it always makes sense to add cartarine in a SARM stack. But does it always make sense to add testosterone in a steroid stack? Matt, you know, have you ever run a cycle without testosterone? And, you know, what do you think about this, first off? I'm curious to hear your opinion.
I haven't. I haven't run one without it. I think in the right situation, it's fine to not use test if you know what you're doing. I don't think, you know, you can just throw compounds at the wall and whatever sticks run, because that's a recipe for disaster, and you're not doing things right, and you're not going to get, you know, the best effect out of it. Test is easy because it's such a basic hormone, right? When you look at it on paper, it's 100 to 100, androgenic to anabolic. So it's normal, right? It's what our body makes. It's our hormone. It's our male hormone. So I think that's why guys always say, you know, you have to run it. It's the base, because it's the same name. That's what our hormone is. But the truth is, all these other things are derived from testosterone anyways. They're really all the same thing. There's all just minor differences in all these compounds, right? Which creates the different ways that they affect us and the different ways we react. I think the articles that Steve wrote on the forum about how to stack actually explain some of this really well. And I think if you have enough androgens in your cycle, you don't need tests. So I think the risk is, if you were going to run something that's more, you know, mild and it's more anabolic, if you don't run tests, then you're going to have probably the side effects of low libido and, you know, dick problems, and, you know, maybe you're going to get emotional, those kind of things. So I think if there's a way to do it where, you know, say you're not going to run tests, you just want to try something out. And you say, you know what, I'm going to run DECA. I really want to run DECA, but I got to have some androgen in there. You know what, maybe then you want to run a low dose of Tren or something like that, where you're balancing. So I think that's the key. You got to have some type of androgenic activity going on in your body for you to feel like a man. And you want that anyway in a cycle. You're going to need some of it. So I guess my long-winded answer is, yes, you can do it if you know what you're doing. If you're not, you know, if you haven't done enough research and you don't think you're advanced, then you should probably run it. It doesn't have to be a high dose, but run it to be safe. But just be aware that test aromatizes a lot more than people think. It's a common misconception, just because it's our hormone, that it doesn't. But it really does aromatize more than a ton of compounds. So you got to be aware, you know, when you're going to run a cycle with tests, that you have your proper supports.
The way I view testosterone, first of all, if we go back in the 70s and 80s, guys would not run testosterone on their cycles very often, because they didn't have access to aromatase inhibitors back then. As we get into the 90s and 2000s, it became standard, to use testosterone in your cycles because they had access to SERMs during the 90s. Something like Novadex, they'd run Novadex on cycle, and that would help block estrogen. Although it wasn't the most, optimal choice, it still helped block a little estrogen, so they were able to get away with it. As we got into the 2000s and today, we have stuff like Aromasin. We had Arimidex at the time. Letro, a lot of the old school guys like Greg Valentino, they're always preaching Letro. Because Letro was one of the early AIs, so they haven't really modernized their advice. I'm sure when I'm Greg Valentino's age, I'll probably be telling people, run Aromasin. By then, there'll be a more superior aromatase inhibitor. But my point is, now that we have access to AIs, you can better control your estrogen because testosterone, the compound, does aromatize into estrogen very, very heavily. So you can run it in a cycle. I always tell guys, I wrote an article like that Matt mentioned about how to stack steroids. There's a method to the madness of stacking steroids. And the mistake guys make is that they'll run testosterone, a lot of testosterone, and a lot of a second aromatizing compound. And then they'll start bloating, they'll get estrogen-related side effects, and it's a domino effect. They'll have high blood pressure, and that basically causes a huge domino effect of insomnia, water retention, bloat, increased heart rate, lower endurance, insomnia. I think I mentioned insomnia, but lots of problems like that. And it's because they don't quite understand what they're really doing when it comes to stacking. So, it's very important if you do decide to stack testosterone in your cycle that you use it correctly, just like stacking any steroid. But in some situations, you don't need testosterone in your cycle. Like if you're running Tren, you don't need testosterone because Tren is already androgenic. So why would you need to add testosterone to it? There's no reason to add it. You would want to run an anabolic with Tren because Tren is so androgenic already, but running an anabolic would add to your cycle. Something like T-Bol or Anavar would be really good to add to it, but it won't add the side effects. So say you run Tren and then you add testosterone to it, a large amount of testosterone, a moderate dose, like 500 milligrams, you're adding to side effects. You're adding water retention. And I've never understand that concept. I don't understand how you can add steroids to a cycle and reduce side effects. You hear that parroted information on the forums so many times, but it doesn't make any sense. And you can run blood work and prove that. Run Tren by itself and then see your blood work. Run it for 8 weeks. Come off. And then like 6 months later, run Tren with 500 milligrams of testosterone and then run blood work. I guarantee you your blood work will be worse with that testosterone than it would be without. Your estrogen levels will be higher. Your blood pressure will be higher. Your other values will be higher. You're going to be just as suppressed. Testosterone doesn't prevent suppression. Doesn't prevent shutdown. That's another myth that people parrot. They think if you run testosterone in a cycle that it prevents shutdown, and it doesn't. Testosterone shuts you down. That's why people who go on TRT for life have to go on for life. They don't just go on TRT for a year and then say, you know what, I'm going to stop taking testosterone, and then they're fine. They're not shut down anymore. No, you're shut down when you're taking it. Your LH and FSH drops to zero. So, there's a method to the madness of stacking steroids. And if you Google evolutionary.org stacking steroids, you'll see my article where I kind of lay out cycles. Another problem with testosterone, let's say you're stacking it with DECA. Okay, a lot of people say, oh my God, that's crazy. How could you use DECA without testosterone? That's crazy. Guys in the old days always used DECA without testosterone. Always. But they were smart. They used Proviron with the DECA. So that's the correct way to stack that, stack something with DECA. Now, if you add testosterone to DECA, you will increase your chance of estrogen side effects, gynecomastia, bitch tits, water retention, all that stuff. So you hear this cycle online, the Devo test DECA cycle. That's a very popular parroted cycle online, but it is riddled with side effects, estrogen retention. And DECA aromatizes less than both testosterone and Devo. So people will run that cycle and then they'll blame DECA because they get bitch tits. It's not the DECA giving you bitch tits. It's the other shit you're running. So instead of running two aromatizing compounds with your DECA, run Proviron with it and then stack in a little bit of an androgen, maybe a little bit of testosterone and or a little bit of Tren. That would be a great cycle, actually. Running DECA, light Tren, and Proviron at 50 milligrams a day. You will fucking have an amazing cycle doing that, and you won't have side effects. Oh, you'll have side effects, but you won't have the side effects that you would if you ran 500 milligrams of testosterone with DECA. So that would be an example of stacking steroids to their benefits rather than stacking steroids because some guy, some guru 20 years ago decided to parrot information. So, you know, that's how it goes. But testosterone is a great, like Matt said, it's 100 to 100. It's both androgenic and anabolic. If you run it at a moderate or high dose, it becomes a very androgenic compound. So you can run testosterone by itself at 500, 750, or 1,000 milligrams, and you get some outstanding results just by itself. You know, so, you know, that's how it goes. But there is a method to the madness of stacking steroids, guys, like I said. And you definitely want to check out that article. What do you think, Matt? Anything else you want to add, or...?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the mindset a lot of times is just more gear means more results. And I think the more you actually research, you know, these compounds, how they work, and you look at real world results, that's not actually true in a lot of cases. More gear usually means more side effects is what it is. So if you're interested in another compound, you know, EQ, DECA, something like that, and you're not sure, run test, but just run it really low. That way you can, you know, you can see what the other compound's going to do. Or look into, you know, something else you've used before that is androgenic, that's going to give you, you know, that little boost that you need. So you have to, you got to just think these things through and make sense of it and not just trust what, you know, like I said before, some guy on a keyboard is telling you because that's what they've read a million times. Like, if we all did the test DECA D-ball cycle, we'd all be bloated every day and we'd look terrible. You know, most of us can't get away with that and, you know, have a really nice look to us. So, yeah, just, you know, just keep researching and try it. If you're not sure, try it. You know, give it a go.
Yeah, so our next topic, Matt, I know you're a dad, has to do with dad bod. And we get this question a lot on the forums. And it's a really good question, and it's something that all of us, okay, all of you guys in your 20s think this will never happen to you, but shit happens in life. You may go through a divorce, you may lose your job, you may have to move, you know, you may have to, you know, you may get injured, you may just lose your motivation, you know, you might go through a depressive stage. I don't know, anything can happen, but you go from being really, really fit, you'll stop working out for like even like 2 months, 3 months of not working out, you will lose your conditioning so fucking fast. 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, you start getting the dad bod, okay? And a lot of people, I know so many guys, they have kids, and like the first year is so miserable. The kid's crying all night, the wife's nagging them, and he just doesn't have time to go to the gym anymore. Priorities change, you know? So, you know, they you get out of shape. And so this question is a really good one. What should you do? Should you hop on steroids? If you get out of shape, you stop working out, should you just hop on steroids to get back in shape? So Matt, let me ask you this question, because, I mean, I'm not sure if you've ever had this happen to you as well, where you've kind of had to take time away from the gym then have to come back. What was your strategy?
Yeah, absolutely it happened to me. So I'm like the typical case where I started training at a really young age, all through high school, all through college, always worked out, always looked pretty good. Fortunately for me, being the kind of the build that I am, I was able to put on a good amount of mass that I kept. You know, it was natural muscle I put on. It's always been there. So I stayed, you know, pretty well active, doing everything I always had. Met my wife when I was around 20, and still we were pretty good for a couple years, but we got married and stuff pretty quick. So once we got married and then the kids came, the kids are the big one, because times have changed now. Men are just as equally involved in doing everything with the kids. So guys are getting up in the middle of the night to feed the baby, to do everything, right? It's a 50-50 deal. And you just don't have time. And if you have time, you're going to sleep, because you probably only slept 3 hours the night before. So your energy is just destroyed. It just sends your body completely out of its normal, what it wants to be. You're not eating as good because you're always in a rush. So, you know, it's easy to grab something when you're out, and it just becomes a big clusterfuck. So that definitely happened to me. Basically, you just realize you have to make time as the kids get older. The game changer is when they start going to school, because then all of a sudden you have your time back, and, you know, you can get on a more of a normal set schedule. So
can you just go to the gym? Don't they have the things for kids at the gym?
A lot of them do. The gym I'm at now doesn't. The one before this did have one. So that was awesome. I think when I was there, it was like $8 for a week. You can go as many times as you want. So it was like dirt cheap to do it. So if you're in that situation, that's an awesome tip. Make sure your gym has a daycare. It's so easy. You're only going to be there an hour, hour and a half at the most. So it's not a big deal. And these gyms will hire basically like teenage girls to watch it. So they love the kids. Like, they're super good with them. You don't have to worry about some nasty old lady or something, right?
So how did you, when you got back into the gym, you didn't hop on steroids?
No.
Right away. Well, how long did it take, would you say, versus how long you were off to get your conditioning back to where you were before, you think?
I mean, I never completely stopped, but it probably took me from when I got back into lifting, like, every day, probably about a year, if I had to guess, to get everything kind of back to where I was before. But I never had the desire to just jump on gear right away. I wanted to be natural, you know, with the family and everything. I didn't want to push it, I guess. I just, you know, just wanted to get back into shape and be healthy again. So, yeah, probably a year of just training and getting the diet back to more consistently where it should be, being able to eat dinner at a normal time and, you know, kind of get on a schedule. But for you guys that are in this situation, because, you know what, there's nothing wrong with it. Life happens and time goes so fast. I wouldn't run gear. I wouldn't do it. I would get yourself back first, because you're just going to end up, one, hurting yourself, because your strength is going to go up so quick, plus your muscle memory is going to come back at the same time. It's just going to be a recipe for disaster. Or two, you're just going to waste it, because it's only going to get you back to where you can get to naturally anyways. It's not going to get you to that plus enhance you on top of that. That's not realistic. So what you want to do, you want to get everything back to where it was. And that's more than just your muscle, right? That's your ligaments and your tendons, because they're going to need to adjust as you build some muscle back and you start, you know, training every day and the wear and tear on your body. So you got to get everything back to where it used to be. Your metabolism's going to adjust as well, because now you're working out, you're probably eating better, you might be doing some cardio. So I would definitely save the cycle, use it as motivation. Tell yourself, you know, once I get to give your whatever your goals are, you know, once I get to that point, then I know I'm back and I know I'm ready. So use it as something to look ahead instead of using it as a shortcut. That's the way that I'd put it.
Here's the thing, guys. Everyone wants to freak out over this topic. The bottom line is every professional athlete has an off season, and a lot of them have different strategies to how they handle their off season. Some guys don't even work out during their off season. Other guys, they stick to a strict diet. They still work out, yada, yada, yada. But all things being equal, they do not kill themselves in the off season. They do not freaking destroy their bodies in the off season. So resting your body because shit happens in life is not the end of the world. If anything, when you come back, it's a great way to kind of reboot things and set a goal of getting back to where you were before and striving to go further. So this rush of having to hop on steroids is ludicrous. I mean, look at hockey players. They play 82 fucking games during the season. They're fucking hammering their bodies. You know, in the off season, their bodies need a rest, and they rest their bodies. Then they have mini camps. Then they have training camp. Then they have preseason. Then they have regular season. You know, they work their way back, and they get back into their conditioning. So, you know, hammering your body into the ground after you've been out a long time makes no sense. If it did, how come professional athletes have mini camps, training camp, preseason, then regular season? How come they don't just jump into regular season week one? You know, when I was a kid, I always wondered that. I was like, why are they, you know, having training camp? Why are they having preseason? Why do they have practices? Why don't they just play a game every day? I didn't understand it. But, you know, we're human beings. We're made of flesh. We have, you know, we're not robots made of steel here. So use that time off as an advantage to rest your body. If you hop on steroids, Matt brought up a good point, you're going to get yourself hurt because your body isn't conditioned for that extra wear and tear of pushing yourself hard in the gym. Plus, you're just going to be sore and you're not going to have your conditioning down. You need your body conditioning, your muscle conditioning, your endurance conditioning, all that conditioning needs to come back. Then you can hop on steroids. So a rule of thumb, it's a cliche that we get from like triathletes, okay, who are the most in shape people on the fucking planet, okay? Ironmen are the most in shape people on the fucking planet, okay? You can argue that all day, okay? Bodybuilders aren't even in their fucking league when it comes to complete endurance of muscle and endurance conditioning, right? Their rule of thumb is if they take a year off from training, they give themselves 6 months to get their conditioning back before they get back to that same level. So however long you take off, half that time it's going to take you. If you took 3 months off, it's going to take a month and a half. If you took 6 months off, it's going to take 3 months, and so on. So that's reasonable, okay? If you took 5 years away from the gym, let's say you worked out till you're 30, then you got a family and you quit the gym for 5 years, you need to give your body 2.5 years, okay, to get the conditioning back before you start thinking about steroids. So, you know, there's no point in using the steroids. The steroids aren't magically going to put you back to where you were before. You really have to train your body to get back. And muscle memory and body memory are real things, okay? People don't think they're real. They're real. Just look at professional athletes who blow out ACLs. It happens all the fucking time. They're out for the year, then the next year they come back, and a lot of them have even better seasons than they had the year before. Adrian Peterson is a perfect example. How was he able to come back and have such a great season? Because he's a genetic freak who had amazing body memory and muscle memory. He had been playing football since he was fucking 4 years old, so his body quickly came back. But if you've never worked out in your life, and you start working out for like a year, then you quit for 5 years, then yeah, you're basically starting from scratch. So the more hours you've put in when you're younger, the easier it's going to be to come back. So just be patient. Use it, you know, turn a negative into a positive. That's my advice. Don't be stupid. Don't be a moron and hop on steroids, because steroids are not magic. So we have a couple more topics. I'm not sure we're going to get to it, but this kind of ties into what Matt was saying earlier. You know, juggling you know, the hoe in fitness. How do you do it? So, Matt, you had a question that came in on that. I'm curious to see what was the question exactly. What were they getting at?
Yeah, he was more wondering. So he's always been into fitness, and he was wondering, because he's a young guy that's still dating, and he said, I'm not sure how to go about this best to keep my fitness, like to keep involved the way I want to be. I like to date a lot of girls at once. So should I continue to do that and sacrifice some of my fitness, or should I try to dial it down and just date one girl at a time? So I thought, well, that's kind of an interesting question. I guess it's a lot more popular, I find now, to date more than one person at the same time. It sounds like this guy's, you know, probably in pretty good shape. He's been, you know, training, working out a ton. It's his, you know, major part of his lifestyle. So I would think it's probably more a personal choice. Like, if he's not ready to settle down, if that's not even in his mind at all as a possibility, then you know what? Just continue to date different women and, you know, manage your workouts when you can. You know, plan your dates around your workouts. If you're thinking there's a possibility you might find somebody, well, then maybe it's time to date one person at a time and really actually get to know them more than, you know, when you're just knowing a little bit about a bunch of different people. So it's tricky. I haven't been in this game for a long time, but I think it's going to be different based on everybody you talk to. It's like a personal choice, I guess.
It's hard. It's a hard situation because some people aren't good at managing time. I happen to be someone who is. So for me, it's not really a problem. You know, even when I was actively dating, I'm not now. I'm only seeing one person. But when I was actively dating before, I would just, you know, I might meet a girl for lunch. I might meet a girl, you know, for dinner, you know. So, you know, it's not that big a deal. If you're working out 4 or 5 times a week at the gym for an hour, it's not that big of a bite out of your life. So it can definitely be managed. A lot of guys struggle with time management. So, you know, it just depends. If you want to spend, like, more time with a girl, then, you know, bring her with you to the gym, you know, and kind of condense it. A lot of women love going to the gym. And, you know, that would be a great way for you guys to kind of... I wouldn't, you know, you don't want to take her to the gym for like the first maybe 3 or 4 dates, but if you're dating her for longer than that, a 5th, 6th date, go to the gym and work out together. Just have a fun time. Don't be too serious about it. Just, she can do the same exercises you're doing. Obviously, she's going to be doing less weight and less reps and less sets, but, you know, you can kind of show her how strong you are and stuff, so she might be impressed. But that'd be a good way to kind of condense it, and then afterwards you guys can go you know, grab a bite to eat or something, and or go swimming, or so you can kind of make it a fun date and combine fitness in your life. There's all kinds of activities that you can do besides the gym. You can go jogging, you can go on a hiking trail, you can go bicycling, like I said, swimming. You can go swimming, go to your pool. Go to a community pool or whatever, and you know, it'd be fun. Not something you want to do early on. You don't want to basically, you know, she's probably not going to be comfortable in a bikini early on dating. You know, women tend to be self-conscious, but you know, there's all kinds of exercises you guys can do together to kind of supplement. And then sex is exercise. So if you're going to have sex with the girl, that's cardio, you know? So just go to work out in the morning and then have sex with her in the evening, or have sex with her in the morning and work out in the evening. Split it up, you know? So there's different ways to kind of, you know, view this, I think. I don't think it's that big a deal at all. But, you know, I would say, though, if a girl isn't supportive of your gym time, and some women may be like that. They may be like, you know what? You know, I don't want you going to the gym today. I want you spending time with me. That could be an issue. You know, that's something to watch out for, because, you know, she should be supportive of your lifestyle when it comes to that. Our next topic actually ties into lifestyle. And this is something that was submitted to Matt. and they want to know about if recreational drugs, alcohol, and cigarettes tie into fitness. And Matt, you had a friend that kind of asked about this. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is one of my pet peeves is when I go to the gym and I see people either coming to the gym or leaving and they're smoking. Like, it absolutely, like, I'm pretty chilled out, but this is one of those things that makes me want to just lose my mind because I don't understand it at all. So that was basically the question, was more geared towards the guy that was smoking, but he did mention the other ones too as kind of, I'm thinking more like the guy that does this during the week and then on the weekend he goes out or whatever. So it was more geared around that. To me, like I said, it drives me nuts. It has to be a lifestyle. It has to be. Because things like smoking and recreational drugs, like, will just destroy your body. Like, you're just begging to have some type of cancer. And it just makes no sense, you know, when you're eating to make yourself better health-wise. You know, you're eating fruits and vegetables and, you know, you're exercising. It's good for your heart. It's good for your body. You're trying to look good. It's so counterproductive. So this is when I say, and you know what? I've proven it a little bit just in the few days of the fasting. Steve's done it doing the 10-day fast, which is crazy. You got to fucking be mentally tough once in a while. Suck it up. Like, people are just such babies. You know, I can't quit. You know what? You can. Don't tell me you can't quit. People do it all the time. You're just being a bitch about it because you don't want to, because it's an addiction. You have to do it. You just have to tell yourself, I'm going to quit. It's over. And then you win. You have to decide that you're going to do it. If you feel like you want to try one of these gums or something like that, go ahead. I don't think any of that shit's necessary. I think you just got to man up or woman up and stop doing it. And this is just, it just frigging drives me insane to see people taking, you know, years off their lives and they're just going to have so many health problems when they're in the gym. And half of them look really good right now. You know, half of them are in their 20s and 30s and they're in great shape. And I just think, man, when you're 40, you're going to be the guy that everybody thinks is 60 because that's what it'll do to you over time. So, I mean, I could go on with this thing for hours, but I know we're getting close here, so I want to let you get in on this, Steve.
Well, like I said, it's a lifestyle. I think it is weak-minded. Like, I think when you do something you know is not good for you and you do it anyway, you know, you have to kind of question your own self-confidence, your own morality, maybe. But I think it has a lot to do with self-confidence. I think people who abuse their bodies with recreational drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, they just hate themselves. And they have a depression. And the good news is you can overcome it. You know, you don't have to be like that anymore. The first step is getting rid of your shitty fucking friends, all right, who don't give a flying fuck about you. That's step one, all right? And then you're going to have people say, cry, oh, but they're my friends, blah, blah, blah. They're not your friends, okay? Look at Houston. Look at fucking Houston right now, drowning, all right? There's people... Families are drowning. Where are their friends? Their friends don't give a flying fuck about them. If they call up their friend in fucking Tennessee and was like, hey, can we come stay with you? You think they're going to fucking be like, hey, come stay with us? They're not their fucking friends. Find new friends, okay? Trust me, it's not the end of the world. Find new fucking friends. Because these aren't your friends, okay? You can go fucking find some positive friends who are going to have a good influence on you. Get away from them. You young guys, you better fucking get away from these people ASAP. Move if you have to. I don't care, but you need to get away from them. Number two, you need to be mentally strong, like Matt said. You need to say, fuck it. Take that shit right now, throw it in the fucking trash, the alcohol, the drugs, the cigarettes, throw it in the fucking trash and say, I'm not going to fucking touch this shit again. Avoid bars and clubs and cigar halls or whatever the fuck they call them. Just stay away from it, all right? I don't go to places where people smoke, because smoking, secondhand smoke will kill you. Thirdhand smoke will kill you. I don't want to smell your fucking shit, all right? So have some respect for people who don't want to smell your shit. Have some respect for yourself. That's how you're going to do it, and you will fucking succeed. In fact, go on our fucking forums, evolution.org, post up a log, and say, I'm going to fucking quit recreational drugs, or I'm going to quit alcohol, or I'm going to fucking quit cigarettes. You're going to fucking do it, because we're going to fucking force your ass to do it. All right? So this is the time to do it now. All right? This is the time to make yourself better and stop feeling sorry for yourself and depressed, because this shit is only going to fucking hurt you and make you worse. So that's my advice. I appreciate everyone watching. Again, you live in Texas or Louisiana. I hope you guys are going to be okay. And we will talk to you guys on our next show. We really appreciate you listening.